It is now my pleasure to introduce our next speaker, Mr. Michael Batchelor, who will lead the next session on Leadership and Culture, Building Highly Reliable Systems of Care. Michael is the CEO of Baptist Easley Hospital and has over 20 years of healthcare experience, including progressive leadership in health system and operational management, business development, and team building. Starting his career as a combat field medic within the U.S. Army, he has served several posts in the U.S. and Germany. He holds a master's degree in healthcare management from Troy State University, is a graduate of both Leadership Greenville and Furman University's Riley Institute for Diversity, and he holds a green belt and black belt in Lean Six Sigma certification. Please join me in welcoming to the podium Mr. Batchelor.
Thanks, man. You appreciate it. Well, good afternoon. Come on, it's after lunch. Good afternoon. You know, I feel like my dad's a Baptist preacher, and I feel like I'm at church on Sunday when everybody's at the back, and so we must be a lot of Baptists here today. But anyway, it is a joy to be here. Again, thank you for that introduction. Again, I am Mike Batchelor. I'm the Chief Executive Officer at Baptist Easley Hospital that was alluded to. And again, I've been in healthcare again about 20 years, no kidding, since about 1985. It's hard to believe in my career I've had three jobs. I've had spent the first 20 years in the United States Army, and then I got out back in 2000, came back home to the upstate of South Carolina. And how many folks here are from South Carolina today? There you go. I see your hands in the back. See those Baptists back there? And again, came back to the upstate of South Carolina, and then I went to work for the Greenville Health System, which is a large integrated health system, an academic center. And then about 2 years ago, moved over to a community-based hospital to begin to manage one of our hospitals that is jointly owned by two of the largest systems in the state of South Carolina. And come to Chicago often and do a lot of work with the Joint Commission and some other agencies. And I'm reminded in Chicago is that you can walk around Chicago and the food is great. And anytime you speak, folks begin to say, hey, where are you from? They say you got to be either from Mississippi or Texas or South Carolina. And then I go on, they just want to keep hearing you talk. Well, last night, next door, I'm not going to talk more about restaurants, but I was next door and a man named Jim who owns the Rosemont. And if you've ever eaten at the Rosemont, they have great steak, great food. And during that conversation with Jim, and I've known him for about 5 or 6 years, he asked me a question. What are you doing back in town? And I told him, and I said, Jim, I got a question for you. I said, I'm getting ready to speak to a great deal of strong leaders, highly motivated, energetic pharmacists across the country who are doing great work. And I said, if they were here tonight eating your food, I said, how can we be sure, based on the reliable work of this restaurant, that those steaks are going to be good each and every time? And he said to me, he said, well, here's what we do. We have a taste test. We bring people together and we taste our product. And he said, it begins with me as the leader, as the owner. I thought that's pretty unique. I went on to have the conversation with Jim and I said, Jim, so what about if after a night you have 8 or 9 steaks that get brought back? He said, doesn't happen here. And I said, well, tell me a little about that story. He said, because it's the same people doing the same job all the time. I said, well, if it did happen, what would happen? Would you terminate the employee? He said, oh, no. I believe we got to re-educate, 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 and re-educate. Now, if they don't follow my rules, then they'll get the axe. He said, but majority of our work today for improvement is re-education and personal accountability. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about that today based on a leadership perspective. Again, it's got to be one of these things. So when you think about that, my predecessor, who was originally scheduled to speak to you today, he had talked about this, and he and I had a little joke about this, about one of these things. Is it really about today, one of these things? For most of you, remember Sesame Street. You remember Kermit. You remember the Cookie Monster. And if you look at that, is it really about one of those things that you see there today? Or is it about one of these things? So you think about in 2011, 2012, based on the NTSB, the National Transportation about zero fatalities in 2 years. Zero. Now, you take a step in the middle here, the roller coaster. We all are children at heart. We love roller coasters. Do you realize in the United States, there's about 1.7 billion trips a day across the country and across the world? Out of that, about 4 deaths occur annually. Now, I think it's really about the next one. In this country today, on average, each week, about 39 sponges are left inside a patient. In the good old U.S. of A, 39 sponges. Operating on the wrong body part, roughly 20 each and every week in this country. In cost, back to the patients, their families, the taxpayers of this country, roughly about $1.5 billion. So do you think it's one of these things or one of the other things? We wish it was a cookie and we couldn't count the cookie. Again, before we go on to the rest of the presentation, I just want to remind the group that I'm not here to promote any other organization nor to defer on any other organization because I have enough problems at my own organization, I assure you. But for this presentation, I just want to share with you on some areas that may have missed it the first time. And then I'll share with you at the end on some folks that have done some great jobs at this time. You think back in 2011 at Tulane Medical Center, and they alerted patients after a medical gear improperly was sterilized. I thought about this around the CEO of the organization at the time, Dr. Robert Lynch, that he had to acknowledge the error. He had to communicate the error. And he had to say, you know what, we will be responsible for those errors. Back in Pittsburgh, unnecessary stents at Exela Health, where 141 patients received stents in 2010 that did not even medically need them. Wow, how could that happen? Again, breaking news, wrong kidney removed from Methodist cancer patient. Can you imagine being that family member that day when you already had one bad kidney? Again, another example. The surgeon was told in this case by the student that you're getting ready to take out the wrong kidney. And the surgeon still made the decision. Both of these physicians were charged with manslaughter in these cases. Again, Dr. Mark Chasson, who's a good friend of mine at the Joint Commission, back about 4 years ago, the Joint Commission began to transform itself. And it all began to transform itself around high reliability and a just culture. And Mark made a comment about the current state at a national meeting on quality. And here is the United States comments that he made based on our country and the health systems that we deliver each and every day. Number one, that we have routine safety processes which fail routinely. Now, I'd like for you as pharmacy leaders today to just take a snapshot. Maybe not worry about to the person to your left or to your right, but I would say take a look at your organization, the organization that you show up to each and every moment, each and every day. And I hope that each one of you show up each and every day. And I'm sure you do as leaders. I thought about our colleagues out in Dallas, Texas this week. And we've all heard it today. There was a breakout on Ebola. Have you thought about those leaders in that organization today? It could be one of us. It may be one of us here today. My heart goes out to that organization because all the work that they have done, both the past and the present, will be remembered for a moment around the country and Ebola. So think about that today as you begin to navigate through some of the presentation. So Dr. Chasson began to talk about these failed routine processes. One is hand hygiene. Medication administration. I think you all are familiar with that one. Patient identification. Communication and transitions of care. When I look at my results each and every month around our HCAP results, around our measurement sticks we use, I continue to see gaps in our transition of care. And I'm like, we've got to figure that out. These are more uncommon and preventable adverse events. Surgery on the wrong patient or body part. We just talked about that one. Fires in the OR. You know, we do over 28 million surgeries each and every year, and we still have over 200 fires in our ORs. That's just not acceptable. Retained foreign objects, infant abductions. In a 20-year period, we've had over 230 infant abductions. Would any of us here today want one of our infants to have been abducted? Not on my watch, and I know not on your watch. Inpatient suicides. It's truly uncommon, but these are definitely preventable adverse events. It doesn't have to be this way. By show of hands, how many believe it doesn't have to be this way? Every hand should go up, and I'm getting a little older now, I'm 50, so every hand is up, and some of you are too. We must say, not on our watch. It doesn't have to happen. I want you to leave here today charged up more than you've ever been. As I've navigated the halls of this, the Westin over the last 24 hours, I've heard many of your comments about this great conference and the great breakouts and the great education, because organizational dollars are tight today. So you need to take this back to your organization. And I just heard this constant theme about becoming better and becoming informed. So again, it doesn't have to be this way. You know, Dr. Batalden, if you know him, a professor at Dartmouth, he said every system is perfectly designed to get the results it gets. Think about your systems that you have in place today. Think about those systems. So how have others done it? High reliability organizations manage very serious hazards extremely well. Think about the commercial aviation industry. Think about the nuclear power industry. So my question to each one of you today is, what do they all have in common? Well, they have highly effective process improvement. They have people that are committed to zero harm and zero defect. It's almost sometime when I began my journey in Lean Six Sigma and that work of really process improvement and project management, I almost came insane about it, that I was looking for so much. And I'm going to continue to look for so much until we discontinue of having wrong site surgeries, till we discontinue having central line bloodstream infections. This process should be a warning for each of us today, is how have others done it to fully function as a safety culture? I know we all hear the buzzwords across our hospitals today that really talk about a just culture. A culture that's not a blaming culture. A culture that says, you know what, I'm going to hold you accountable. But I would say majority of you, especially I would wage to say for those who have been in healthcare over the past 15 years that are in this room today, and I don't know who you are, we've probably lived in a culture that we felt if we make an honest mistake, that we're going to receive punishment. It's going to follow us the rest of our career. So many times we get silent. And we don't share because we don't always have the support from the C-suite. Well, I can tell you what, I'm out here recruiting today as well. And if we get folks on our team that are committed to high reliability and a just culture, they're going to get my support because it's all from the top down and the bottom up. It's across the organization. It's just not in the C-suite, nor it's in frontline management with the employees, with the medical staff. It's each and every one of us. Other organizations that have had those things in common discover and they fix unsafe conditions early. Why wait? Why wait till someone has to report it? Why not stop it right then? You know, one of the things we do at our hospital system is that we walk around, we pick up trash. But we've identified with trash more than just an aesthetic issue. It's about safety. We begin to walk people to destination about 15 years ago. To me, that was the golden rule. People look lost. Why point our way? Why not take them there? That's another safety. How do you relate all those things back to safety in a safety culture? And then that collective mindfulness, where we as a group get together and we just focus at the center, at the core of why we all show up each and every day. Whether you're working in a hospital or whether you're working in retail, it's for one purpose, the patient. That's the center of all that we do. And I think Dr. Chasson, I think he had it right there. Again, you look at this slide. This is, when you think about aircraft, you think about aircraft carriers, and you just look at the slide and you look at the four or five people that you can see. And around that environment, because I've been on a carrier, there are many more people. But there are really some key folks. You see those yellow suits? Those are 18 and 19-year-olds who are managing a $65 million aircraft. I would wager to say, and I'll say this and date myself, many of you look like you're 18 and 19. But I know you're not. But I can say this. Would you, as a leader, would you give that autonomy to that 18 and 19-year-old to manage that job? Would you allow that to happen? We as taxpayers, we do it every day. But yet they get it right because they have process that they follow. They have a chain of command that they feel like they have accountability to. They've shifted to be authentic, to say, hey, when they make a mistake, they got to share it, because there's a few people that are in that cockpit that depend on them. And there are other folks around that aircraft depend on them when they bring that aircraft in for landing. So, again, it does matter. Again, we talked about a few systems that had some failures along the way. But also we want to talk about a few systems that have taken it a little step further. And that's Memorial Health, Herman Healthcare out of Texas. Again, we've partnered with Memorial Herman. They've done a great job. But again, this system here is on an all-out mission to eliminate healthcare-acquired infections. By show of hands, I've seen the list. Maybe if I ask this, you may be here today and not somewhere else. But how many are in here today from this organization? Would you raise your hand? From Memorial, okay. I see you over there. They're always in a group. Congratulations. You're doing a fantastic job. But they're on a mission. Their community knows it. I would challenge even my community today. Does my community know that I'm on this mission? Does your community know that you're on this mission to make sure that you have the best, that you're going to step up as pharmacy leaders, and that you're going to lead for the future? I can't remember the three I had lunch with today, but all I know is they were from Wisconsin, and they were sharp as a tack. And I can tell you this, they are committed to excellence by the questions they ask. And I said to these three individuals, I said, you know what, for many years my pharmacy team was really that real quiet group. They kind of historically work down in the dungeons, down where the Omnicells and Pyxis are, behind the counters, doing their job to keep us all safe. But now we, from the C-suite, have got smarter. We've realized that all knowledge doesn't just rely between our ears, that we need you, but we need you to be authentic. We need you to be transparent. We need you to be coming forward, bringing those issues to the table. You are a part of the healthcare team, and don't let anyone ever forget it. You are a great group of leaders for the future. Some of you are middle managers. Some of you are upper management. Some of you you just came into healthcare, and some of you, I can tell, you're on your way like me, in the future on your way out. But what legacy will you leave? By talking to the folks at Memorial Herman when I was there, they are wanting to leave a legacy for their community that they have said, no more. No more on our watch. And I thought it was a challenge, even in the conversation, even though they had some physician resistant, they still were able to say, you know what, we understand, but we're going to press forward, and we're going to press forward with you because we know that's what you really want. But we're leaders enough to say, you know what, it's tough love. It's tough love. We know that you admit patients, and we know that you take care of our patients, but we take care of those patients with you, together, and we're committed. Again, you can see the results. I mean, look at their central line infections, both from the ICU. It may be a little difficult to see, but the trend is downward. In many cases, zero. Cincinnati Children's, again, if you're here today, I think some of you are. Again, I thought this was phenomenal. They put their town on notice. They put the state on notice that we will eliminate all serious harm by leveraging our internal and external learnings. Think about that, learnings. That's what you're here today about. Toward becoming a high reliability organization by June 30th, 2015. Now, do you think that group of leaders and that team there at Cincinnati Children's are going to do that? I bet you they are. They've laid the groundwork out, and they will achieve it. So again, they're committed to high reliability to eliminate harm from their community. Again, there are days between unsafe ICU transfers. I mean, just, it's pretty remarkable. Remarkable data. Again, there are best practices across the country, pharmacy and pharmacy leaders. Reach out. You have the resources right here today to take back from all these different organizations, both health systems, community-based hospitals, you know, retail and so forth. Get together. Come up with those best practices. Be the leaders for the future. Those before you are doing it, and those in the future will do it. So let's talk about this one. Think about what you can control and what I can control. The one on the left has probably been more familiar to each one of us since around 2009. If you're just coming into healthcare, you may never have really seen the building on the left. But for most of you, if you're advocates and you're working with your local and state governments and you're lobbying efforts to improve healthcare across the state in which you serve and live, you probably know a little bit about Washington. But I'm reminded I cannot change everything in Washington. But what I can do is make change where I serve and where I live, in my community hospital, our health system. We can make the difference. That's where it begins. So you may not control one on the left, you definitely control the one on the right. When you think about South Carolina and our journey, I want to talk to you about two or three of those. Again, heart and infection. You know, I am really tired of representing South Carolina, and we're 46th and 47th and everything. But over the last 4 years, we've become top 10% of the nation around heart care and around hospital-acquired infections and around wrong-site surgeries with our safe surgical checklist. So we've done a lot of great work, and we're continuing to advance that forward. Again, in 2013, again, we were one of the highest in the country on quality. The map kind of gives a good depiction. I mean, that is remarkable. Now, if it's education or something else, it's a little bit lower. But when you get here in quality of care, and what that's taken is hospitals and health systems and Blue Cross Blue Shield and all the payers and the business coalition all coming together and said, hey, in South Carolina, we're going to be top. Because number one, the country's $17 trillion in debt, and South Carolina, you're not exempt from that either. And we're doing it based on work with high reliability in that effort. So lessons learned from South Carolina. Collaboration. Collaboration is going to accelerate your performance improvement. More than ever, in every meeting that I'm in, whether it's to acquire other organizations, in acquisitions, and mergers, partnerships on every front, it will no longer be hospitals doing it all alone. It will no longer be administration driving change in the organization. It'll be administrations working with nursing and nursing working with pharmacy and the whole team. It's going to be about collaboration and partnerships to improve. Lessons learned from our work in South Carolina, public scrutiny. Well, I tell you what, the peer pressure that was placed upon leaders for failed systems. We can't make a population healthy by giving them high quality health care. Even though we're top 10% in those three areas, we have some of the worst in obesity, in cardiovascular disease, in tobacco, than probably any other state in the union. So just because we've got this real high-quality care commitment doesn't mean we're going to be able to change our community and the population of health. The triple aim is an essential strategy for South Carolina. If you go out to IHI, you can read about the triple aim. The triple aim is really about driving cost, about managing populations, and about never forgetting that the patient experience and the patient is at the center of all that we do. The other concern we've learned about was fatigue among our PI professionals, because it's a problem, but we will never get off this project treadmill until we build that culture of safety. So again, when you look back to your right and left a while ago, and you look at your neighbor next door to you, again, thinking about yourself, are you committed to a culture of safety? If you're really committed, it's going to show up in the C-suite. If you've never made it to the C-suite, the corporate suite, then I would challenge you to leave you a professional challenge. Are you really living that commitment to patient safety and patient outcomes? Now, many of you may report to a system-level director or a hospital-type director. If they've not been to the C-suite, something's missing. But I can tell by the energy in this room and by the folks that I've met over the past 24 hours, if that's the position you're in today, that is going to change forever. Healthcare will not succeed for the future without pharmacy leaders stepping up to the plate and leading for the future. So, I challenge you, take a look and look within. When we began to do our work in South Carolina, this was kind of our logo. We began to partner with the Joint Commission and others. And so we began to say that South Carolina, that we're going to create a high reliability healthcare institution for every patient, every time. Because it is about doing the right things each time, every time, all the time. A part of that coalition, we have 63 hospitals in the state of South Carolina. It's estimated within the next 10 years, we will go to about 4 to 6 systems with all the consolidations and all the mergers and all the regionalization. But across the state, we had folks like AnMed Health, my hospital that I serve in, Buford Hospital in the Midlands, Bon Secours St. Francis, Georgetown, the Regional Medical Center in Orangeburg, MUSC, another academic institution, Department of Veteran Affairs, and I believe we have Veteran Affairs here today, the Greenville Health System, which is a large integrated system, Roper St. Francis, another part of down in Charleston, South Carolina, again, Palmetto Health, the second largest health system in the state, all came together for every patient, every time, and to bring evidence-based practice and quality and safety to South Carolina. Leaders paying the price now to advance for the future. We also took another piece of work out of the Memorial Hermann playbook. They instituted a Zero Harm Award. We just came out of our annual conference in South Carolina about 2 weeks ago. We gave out 52 awards for organizations out of those 63 that achieved zero harm in central line infections, post-knee surgical infections, and another hospital-acquired infection, 53, zero in the last 18 months. So we know we're doing some great things and some great work there. It's not just about hospitals. It's the trains. It's construction. It's so many different industries that are going towards zero harm and zero defect. Even the Queen. It's kind of a joke. So keep calm, folks. Keep calm and zero harm. I would ask you today, are you calm? But more than ever, I was speaking to a group a little bit larger than this a few weeks ago, and more than ever in U.S. healthcare that I've experienced in my career, that people, that constant, it's this change is so constant. People are so stressed more than they've ever been in my career. People on edge trying to balance work life and quality of life. You all know what I'm talking about. But when we all get together under the same commonality, that patient and each other, we can have zero harm. But we've got to remove the silos today. We've got to go back and think about how we used to kind of work our business, because the business model is going to change. It has to change. So take a deep breath. Take a deep breath. Relax. Have some fun along the way. Again, you've seen these are all over the hospital. You know, what is it about dinosaurs? But again, do you have those zero days in your organization? Do you really have those zero days? Again, before you, we're going to take just a few moments. You've got a little device there. I think you've done this before. And the question is, I'll give you about 15 seconds. Has your organization set a goal of zero harm for at least one patient safety indicator. A, yes, B, no, C, not yet, but we are discussing it now. I'll give you just a few seconds here. So think about that. Are you really committed to that zero harm in your organization? Got about 8 more seconds. Wow, it's about what I thought. You know, about half. 48% said yes. 43% said no. Again, not yet, but we are discussing. So think about that. I think you have a great opportunity as pharmacy leaders to go back from this conference and say, you know what, we polled our colleagues anonymously. And about half said that we're setting goals for zero harm. Ask the question back to your leaders, what is our goal? What is our goal? Again, not to support any industry, but again, thinking about technology. Are we using technology to drive high reliability? There's technology on every front trying to have that zero harm. And the technology is amazing. If you're not seeing that in your organization, you probably should be asking some questions. You know, hand hygiene, we're currently in a process at our organization over the last 3 years that we've done more of the buddy system, more of the witness audit of folks blinding, auditing folks, washing hands. And we've even had system goals, percentages for hand hygiene. And our goal last year was 90% of our care providers that would wash hands before and after care. Do you think we hit the goal? Oh, yes, we hit it. 94%. Until we did 6 months of this blind audit through an RFID system, the results were just overwhelmingly positive. 62% of our care providers are washing their hands before and after care. There's a big gap. So begin to think about how do you advance technology to monitor, to make sure we are really advancing for zero harm. Preventing needle sticks. You know, needle sticks, needleless injections, reduce sharps, waste disposal, eliminate needle stick injuries, and the possibility of needle reuse and cross-contamination. Are we using technology? Are we assessing? Do we have enough forward vision to begin to think about that in our organizations? Barcoding. You all are familiar with barcoding, with Pyxis and Omnis and all these type devices where pharmacy is beginning to really lead their organization into the 21st century. To really say to organizations and to CEOs and to COOs and to CFOs that, hey, if we don't go here now, we will pay for it later. I challenge you as pharmacy leaders, if you're working in an organization where you're just struggling with capital investment, and the organizations have to really set really strong objectives to even keep the doors open, to meet payroll, you've got to come with a loud voice, and you've got to come now. Going back to the data, surgical sponges. There are so many different companies across this land and the world that are piloting and working with organizations to advance these technologies. And I would challenge you to reach out and maybe be considered a part of that. So this question, how often does your organization discuss technology as a way to improve patient safety outcomes? How involved, you know, most of you as pharmacists, you're probably going to be at P&T type committee meetings. You know, how often is technology discussed? How often? I heard some say never. Is it only after a patient is harmed? Is it usually only once a year during the capital budgeting process? Or is it whenever we learn a technology that might improve patient safety? Then we begin to talk about it. The goal is to get pharmacy to become the leaders of many of these projects. You are the forward thinkers of the future. You are the creative ones. Got about 10 more seconds. Okay. Wow. 11% only after a harm event. Usually only once a year during the capital budgeting process, 18%. And whenever we learn a technology that might improve patient safety. So take that back. Be curious about those results. You know, high reliability is more than just the right thing to do. And as you can see, that sample, about 500,000 random hospital admissions where they looked at hospital-acquired conditions resulted in the following. 2,510 excess deaths. An additional $472 million in the cost of care. Folks, it is more than just the right thing to do. It's more than just the moral compass. These are jobs. These are communities. The hospitals and systems that you work in, for most of you today, you are the economic engine for your community. And where will pharmacy leaders be in that conversation for the future? Are you able to frame that conversation to begin to get the folks like myself and your senior executive pharmacy leaders to begin to think about this conversation? How do you begin to frame that? It's more than just the right thing to do. It's about partnerships. Even the federal government has realized that a goal of 40% of reduction in preventable healthcare acquired conditions. They have a goal of 20% of a reduction in 30-day hospital readmissions. We all work these every day. Again, a $35 billion price tag. So it's more than just the right thing to do. Again, you think about a better care and lower cost at Scripps, a national organization. A cross-system team examined open heart procedures. And this is a PI effort, and outcomes were the same. And Scripps, based on that work, no longer require nitrous oxide, but an MD can order it if he or she feels it's even necessary. Again, savings, about $500,000. To reduce ER wait times, nurses and MDs must see patients simultaneously, cutting the average wait time to 30 minutes. We're all looking at ways to reduce cost. In the end, their revenue alone went up about $29 million. Again, it's better care, it's lower cost, and it's the right thing to do. And it's more than just the right thing to do. So let's ask the question to you this one. This will be the last one. Do you know how much your organization would save next year by eliminating central line infections and ventilator-associated pneumonias in your organization? Well, most of you are just flying on this one. Got about 8 more seconds. You know, are you engaged in the process? Are you engaged? Are you leading those processes? Wow. Be curious. As a pharmacy leader for the future, I challenge each of you, go back and look at the IHI and look at the triple aim. Think about how do we reduce costs in our organizations? How do we manage populations of health? Because you have your populations that you're managing. And how do you keep the patient at the center? But you got to be involved in this process if you're ever going to get any access to the C-suite in many different ways to drive change in the organization. So 87% of you said no, and 13% said yes. So is the C-suite today, is it relevant? Is it relevant for pharmacy leaders, managers, independents? Is it relevant for you to engage yourself in the C-suite? Well, I think it is. You've got to understand, though, the organization's strategic priorities. I see some of your faces as I'm talking, because I do the same thing when I'm sitting in a big system-level meeting. I'm like, what do you mean I'm engaged? I'm not even present. And so I would question you, are you present? Are you engaged? And why is the pharmacy relevant? It's huge. Think about the revenues that you guys, ladies and gentlemen, that you produce each and every day. Think about the lives that you save each and every day based on your critical skill set. You do have power. You do have the ability to make change. Because for gentlemen and ladies like myself, money talks. And you have access to a lot of those resources. Bring it forward. But you got to be able to frame the conversation. If you can't frame the conversation, you will struggle. And then you got to recruit those thought leaders. When's the last time you reached out with an agency or recruiting company and said, you know what, I need this type of leader for me and my organization? You got to create thought leaders and recruit those thought leaders. If you don't know the strategy of your organization, then go back to 2009. 2009, the game changed for all leaders in healthcare. If you don't understand the high level of the Affordable Care Act, known as Obamacare, you need to understand those key objectives. It really discusses about insurance coverage, those reforms that were needed to change, the delivery systems, the payment reforms, the transparency, health IT. You're a part of a lot of health IT already. But if you don't understand that real national platform that's been brought down to your local platform, you'll never get with a conversation in the C-suite for pharmacy to really advance the organization forward and to be a part of that change in that conversation. What were your implications back in 2009? It's even relevant today. You got to achieve a solid clinical alignment between hospital and physicians. It's a must-have. You got to deliver superior outcomes. Who better than can deliver that based on this group here? You've got to reduce cost. You know the cost of drugs sold. You know the cost it costs you for your patients. How do you begin to look at that and manage the business a little differently? How do you develop integrated health delivery and information systems within pharmacy? How do you form strategic alliances? We no longer can do business like we did in the past. And I think that's a struggle for America and for hospitals in America. The forward thinkers are doing it. Prepare for a new payment model. That's what the implications were based on the Affordable Care Act. The bottom line, you got to change your business model. You're creative. There's probably been more money spent in this room over the last few days in this conference and preparing you for conversations for the future. You've spent more money getting yourself educated as pharmacists and PharmDs. Your hospital's invested time and systems with you to advance you forward. Now take it back and advance your systems forward. Change the business model. You have that opportunity. You're a game changer. No market-wide implications. The traditional silos are no longer going to work. All the key players of the past have to be completely realigned. All care must be safe. It's got to be timely. It's got to be high quality. And it must be, again, patient-centered. And it can be delivered by teams. It must be delivered by teams. The licensed professional practice must work at the top of their licensure. We're working nurses and doctors and respiratory therapists at the top of their licensure. We cannot continue to move forward like we've moved in the past. And the handoffs must be seamless. So what is the implications for hospital-based and pharmacists? You've got to have a renewed emphasis on safety and high reliability. You've got to have a greater involvement in comparative effectiveness. You've got to understand the generic and the trade. You've got to be able to move that within your system to be able to manage those costs and to increase those revenues. You've got to be able to manage the drug shortages. You've got to be able to understand that and articulate that and frame that. So what about the community-based pharmacist? You've got to increase the responsibility for disease management. Whether anyone in this room likes it or not, to include myself, healthcare will shift outside the walls of hospitals. We will get back into the communities. We will become more regionalized. Doctors will go back in the homes. Home health will go back in the homes. Paramedics will go back in the homes. And how do we prepare for that? I think you have to help us prepare for that. There's got to be greater engagement in employee health. We spend roughly $1.5 million a week in our own employees' health insurance. $1.5 million a week. delivery of primary care on site, CVS, Walgreens. We got CVS MediClinics across our area. We're partnered with them. We've got to engage them. Who better to engage those relationships than pharmacists? You can be the navigator for your health systems to bring yourself to the table. Frame the conversation. Again, our physicians, evidence-based practice. Are our docs and our providers up to the task? They must be. Pharmacy, are you willing to make change? Are you willing to manage your business through evidence-based practice? Are you willing to work through that environment? You must be. I think framing is important. You see our President Clinton there. Remember back when he ran against George Bush? He really framed it well. He said, it's the economy, stupid. You remember that conversation? And George Bush was a great war president on the Gulf War. He got it. But he did not get reelected because he didn't know how to frame the conversation. And Bill Clinton did a great job at framing it. Eric Cantor from the great state where some of you live, he didn't frame it well. His opponent framed it well on immigration. And his opponent won. You've got to be able to frame your conversation if you're going to advance your conversation and pharmacy be a leader in your organization. Thought leadership. This man is well missed. Thought leaders are people who have earned a disproportionate level of respect. They demonstrate the difference between authority and influence. Find them. That was Steve Jobs' goal, to find them. You all chose to be pharmacists for a reason. I believe in my heart and based on experience that you are thought leaders. But across my career, most pharmacy that I've worked with have been silent leaders. No more. It can't happen anymore. I believe this group is the leaders for the future. If you frame it right, you'll get the respect that you've earned and you'll get the recognition that you deserve. Again, this one kind of a tale, basically on some strategies that I've given you today, and I'd like to answer this question to be honest. Has this discussion helped you identify any new strategies based on those other organizations, based on things in the presentation that will give you and elevate your role as pharmacist in your organization? And then I'm going to answer some questions if you have any. Again, I'm confident in pharmacy and pharmacy leadership for the future. But if you take away just a few nuggets, one, be authentic. Be the leader that is within you. If you've been silent, be silent no more. You've earned that and you fill in the blank. But if you're able to frame the conversation for the organization in which you are privileged to serve, and I mean privileged to serve, you will get the attention and the respect that you deserve, because I believe you all came in it as a calling to serve mankind and serve others. Again, so 93%. So take these strategies back and put them into practice, and I think it'll make you a better leader. Again, do we have any questions? I know we've got just about 4 minutes. If there's any questions, I believe there's some mic. I'll be glad to entertain those. Okay, well, I guess this... Yes, sir.
A question. Yes, this is on. You mentioned getting to the C-suite and being that leader, but, my experience with the C-suite has been that there's many, many, many initiatives coming forward. You know, we have lots of good ideas on improvements in healthcare, but how would you guide pharmacy directors or leaders to position something strategically so it's, you know, well aligned with the organization's priorities to have that a project or something, you know, truly vetted or evaluated?
Okay, that's a great question. You know, I think you're right. I think we have so many initiatives out there, you know, and strategy that we're looking at as leaders. And again, I hate to say it this way, but we have a crisis in our country right now. It's called Ebola. And these crises, at many times, from infection control at this time, more than ever in the history of my career, that has one group of people that has been this seamless, transparent, silent group has now been elevated to the attention of what do we do? How do we take the strategies of the organization that we were pressing on, pause right now, manage something, and infection control has used this platform to say, number one, Mr. CEO, we're ready, but we're not ready enough, and we're putting you on notice. Same thing with pharmacy. We know we've got a shortage of drugs across this country. As long as it's not impacting us at the local level, it's not a big deal, right? It is a big deal. Because when preparedness happens, when things do happen that gets our attention, it makes us go back and think, why did we not listen to, you got to be the voice, you've got to be engaged, you've got to lay out the strategy. You guys know where healthcare is going from a pharmacy perspective, correct? Then lay that plan out, do your risk analysis, do your SWOT analysis for the organization. And if your organization is a, what type of organization do you work in again? Did you say that?
Actually, I'm with a technology company.
So. Okay, wow. Okay. So if you're that pharmacist in that company, you lay those initiatives out, you do the SWOT, you bring it to the corporate level, and you just keep hammering it through your chain of command. It will get the attention if it gets the right leaders and that really framing that critical impact for the organization. If it's a lower level impact and I have to make decisions of 10 or 15 different, you know, issues that are major strategy, I'm probably going to push it off, not personally, but just push it off because, number one, it hadn't reached that 15th deal, you know, that strategy. But just keep pushing, keep communicating, and elevating it with the attention that it needs, and you'll get the attention of your C-suite if it has merit, it has impact, it has more of that global impact for the organization. You know, if it's just everyday routine things, I would say that's probably not the thing to bring to the C-suite, but those things that have big picture. It's communication, it's transparency, it's open, honest, and making sure that it's aligned with the strategic direction of the organization.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Again, thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it. Thank you.